What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm King Cat. This is joining you as always. And joining me, my good friend and co-host, the one, the great Jay Veezy. What's up, Jay?
Been watching Formula One Drive to Survive over the weekend. Yeah. Season 2 is out. It's a little weird watching this time around just because I actually watched the whole Formula One season. So now it's like, oh, I see how they kind of put this together, and they've like taken pieces of everything. And like before last year when I watched it, I kind of thought this was like a summary of the whole season. Mm-hmm. And this year it's like, oh, I kind of see how they twist this to make a narrative. They kind of, which in some ways is good, and in some ways I think is unfair to some of the people. But overall it's like, oh, they made this nice and dramatic. I kind of wish other sports would do this too. Over like a full season, just like here's the season in review. Well, but
isn't that kind of what what was that? I don't know if it was done by the NFL thing, but it was follow
like Hard Knocks.
Yeah,
and so they'll do that for like training camp. But it would be nice to see like here's all the narratives that took place over the course of the season, because this show is very narrative driven. Like each different
because now that you say that, I wish Hard Knocks did like a whole. I wish they were following the Browns this season. You know, like
well,
that would have been an amazing thing.
Yeah, and I mean, because they were able to digest. You know, like here's one episode where like they cover like everything that happened to the Williams race team, which, you know, they got off to a rough start to the season and they failed to show up for testing on time. And then that they were last by a large margin this season. And then, you know, like all the stuff that led into that, but they covered it over several races and then they do the next episode and that's another team. Or another set of teams, just kind of a completely different story arc that overlaps with that. And so that's kind of what happens in other sports. There's all these overlapping storylines, some of them that, that, you know, we think are going to turn into big things and then they die out mid season. And then some that, you know, pop up in the middle of the season and then go all the way towards the end of the year. And we try to talk about it here, but it's kind of nice seeing it all like in one documentary format, you know, maybe a little over dramatized package. I guess with F1 it's a little bit easier because it's kind of a traveling circus and all the teams travel together. And with other sports that are doing like the you know, that you've got home games and away games and a ton of travel, it's kind of hard to, you know, if you have to follow 30 teams you know, you got to have 15 different camera crews scattered around the country. And so that's a little bit harder.
I mean, is it though?
I mean, yeah, maybe not if you got a lot of money. But like League of Legends should do it because they tape everything in one spot. Overwatch League missed out on the opportunity to do that because now they're going with the home games approach. So, but I don't know, maybe some of the smaller leagues. Like the NWHL, where there's like five teams, they should try something like that. You know, and then release it on Netflix and everybody spends a weekend watching it and has a good time. And learns a little bit about the sports and the personalities. And
what is it called again?
Drive to Survive.
And who provides it?
Netflix, Formula One.
Okay. I might check that out. I think that sounds interesting. And I think we posed some questions here. Somebody needs to pick this up and start doing this. You know, somebody needs to pay for these things. You know who could possibly pay for these things, Veezy?
Who?
Tony Romo.
Yeah, he's making a lot more money now than he did before. He's signed a record-breaking contract with CBS for I think, was this his first year? No, this was his second year.
This would be his second or third, actually. Yeah,
and he came in as without any commentating experience, replaced Phil Simms, just automatically got stuck in the lead booth for CBS. And I think people were skeptical at first, and then And then everybody realized that he's really good at this because he, not only is he very knowledgeable, but he, his personality shows that he's extremely excited about just watching football. So he's, mm-hmm. he seems like he's having a lot of fun while he's doing this, and people, and that attitude is infectious to the viewing audience as well. So,
I know, like that those first few months or whatever, like. The interesting thing was just that, like,
he was predicting plays.
He was predicting plays. His reads were really good because he had just come off of, like watching a lot of that stuff and studying a lot of that stuff in playbooks and things like that. But I think the way in which he did it was plain English enough, but had that good descriptive styling that you could see what he was talking about easily, even without physically looking at it. And he just is really, really good at doing that, surprisingly. And like you said, the other stuff just kind of is of his nature. He, you know, he's a good TV personality. He shows well, he looks good on TV. So it's just those things. And I know, like, there were so many highlights already of him as a commentator on YouTube and people sharing on Twitter and things like that. So it just was kind of this thing that, like, just kind of became,
yeah, he became a personality, and he became more of a personality, as a broadcaster than he was as a player, which is weird because he was a pretty big figure as a player. Maybe some of it was due to, like, all the criticism that was leveled at him, but yeah, like, he's making more money now as a broadcaster after signing this $17 million contract, or $17 million annually, I should say. That's more than he got paid as a player, so I guess good for him, and we'll be seeing him on. I mean, he was the hottest commodity in NFL broadcasting during this free agency period. It's kind of weird talking about, like, broadcaster free agency rather than player free agency. But I mean, it's a part of it too. It's the broadcasting hot stove. I mean, we talked about it with Overwatch a couple of weeks ago. Like, they lost a couple broadcasters, so now
they lost more than a couple.
I mean, so now the entire atmosphere of what the viewer experience is going to be different, and the people that are talking to you that are spending the most time talking are going to be the ones that help set that atmosphere.
Yeah. All right. What's good? What else is going on in the NFL, JBZ?
The combine's going on, and we'll have a story about that later. But Rich Eisen is going to run his 40-yard dash today. And it's smokescreen season when it comes to the draft. Everybody's reshuffling their expectations about what prospects are good and what prospects are not, and a lot of that is just misinformation to try to get teams to pass on good players, and so you really can't believe anything other than the raw stats that come out of the combine.
Mm-hmm. I know a few guys have been doing their combine stuff, and there have been some guys with some good looks that have probably upped their draft stock.
Like the stuff that shows up on Twitter that I always end up watching is, like, all the big guys that run impossibly fast 40-yard dashes.
Mm-hmm.
These guys that are, like, 300 pounds and can run 40 yards in 5 seconds. The ones that they expect to turn into just explosive defensive linemen. It's just always fun. It's just to, you know, see that much mass move that quickly. Or like DJ mentioned, like a punter that does, you know, 45 reps on a bench press. Just all these things that you would not expect about these players, just because like it's almost like the makeup of an athlete is changing. Like every single position is athletic now. You know, in basketball, it's not just, you can't just grab any tall person now. They have to be both tall and athletic, you know, and same thing in football. It's, you know, not just, you know, every position has to be athletic out there. And so we kind of see that change in the combine as all these different records get broken. And then you see Rich Eisen at the end run a 40-yard dash and in like 6 or 7 seconds. And, you know, and they like to overlay that with the linemen that can run those in 5 seconds. And it's always fun to watch.
I think so, too. It seems boring on paper. Like, the NFL Combine seems boring. But I think when you kind of know what's going on and you know what's on the line, it becomes a little bit exciting. But it definitely leads into guys you might want to pay attention to. So at least just go look at the numbers and see where your team is, so you know whether to boo or cheer, and then wait a year or two to see if your boos or cheers were worth it. All right, going on from there, we have a couple of things to talk about with baseball. We were talking about the Astros and the possibility of retaliation that would be happening against them coming into the season. Well, we're in spring training, and 7 of their batters have already been hit by pitches so far.
Yeah.
I don't think this is the end of it. I think this is only the beginning.
Yeah, and if you want to follow this as it happens, there's a Twitter account that's actually tracking all this. that's kind of exploded in the last week or so. It's at @AsteriskTour. And yeah, they've been tracking not only like Astros that have been hit by pitches, but players who used to be on the Astros that are getting hit by pitches now. it's an epidemic. But it's kind of slowed down the last couple of days. They also have, you know, clips of like clever fan signs and heckling that getting leveled at these players. So if you're really upset that the Astros did not, the players did not get punished enough, and all the other bullshit that went along with the scandal, and you want to see at least the petty revenge tour that's going to happen over the course of this season, that account might be a worthy follow. One other story that kind of came out of nowhere the last couple weeks is that Madison Bumgarner has actually been working a second job, kind of been doing it just like in front of everybody, not really trying to hide it, but not just making a big deal out of it. But he's been working, he's been competing in rodeo events, under the alias Mason Saunders. But like everybody there knows who he is. Everybody all of his fellow MLB players, they know that he's been competing in rodeo on the side. But just the one group that has never really picked up on it is the media until now, until like somebody saw a photo of him winning a tandem event and then whoa, that looks like Madison Bumgarner. And then after they do a little bit of digging, it's like, oh yeah, that's Madison Bumgarner. He's been doing this for years, and you guys just now figured it out. And
I mean, is this so I understand the media's DJ, I'm breaking news. Madison Bumgarner is a hick. He's a good old boy. He's a country boy. But essentially, right, he's just a two-sport athlete.
Yes. Basically, it's, you know, if Madison Bumgarner can do this, then they should have let Kyler Murray do this. it's unfortunately like some of the stuff gets prohibited in contracts. And I think there was some, I think once the story broke, because I think Bumgarner got an injury from dirt biking last year, and but he also competed in one of these rodeo events at around the same time. So I think there was a little bit of speculation that like maybe he heard it in the rodeo and just claimed it was dirt biking or that's all the bullshit that comes with being a two sport athlete. And then you're going to always get accusations of you're not putting your focus in the right place. Mm-hmm. This is like a bullshit thing that Kings fans do, but like, I think former player Willie Cauley-Stein, who was mostly trash, he got criticized a lot for just being an artist on the side. And it's like, you know, you don't have to spend 24/7 sport. And it's just like, but it's just going to be something that gets thrown at you if you don't perform well. And
Bumgarner hasn't
really suffered from not performing well. So like for now, this is just a novelty thing. But if he struggles in Arizona, then everybody's going to start saying like, you know, you should focus less on rodeo and more on your pitching and other bullshit like that. And you also see this whenever they date celebrities too. And it's like their celebrity girlfriends get blamed every time they have a bad game. And it's like that's, they can do other stuff too. Like, you know, whether you want to believe the Kardashian curse is real or not, like this is like,
yeah, curses are a totally different thing. Right. Like, but my thing is I never give people shit for having something on the side as long as it's not super hard distracting. And I think sometimes for athletes, doing something else competitive and athletic can sometimes focus their drive on the other things. You know what I mean? Like winning something else can sometimes make you want to win more at everything else you do. But spending so many hours just dedicated to just one thing, sometimes you have more bad days than good because of that, right? Like you could go into a workout and the workout could go bad, and then that can drag you into the game that the game goes bad. So like having these other things that you can focus on where you're like, hey, you know what? I lost that, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go out here, play baseball tonight and have a fucking good day. And I think those things are sometimes needed. You know what I mean? I think that's why in the day, somebody like Bo Jackson excelled, right? Because he may not have wanted to be he probably did, but I'm just saying he may not have necessarily wanted to be a champion at any particular sport. But he was able to be good at them because he was allowed to do that. He was allowed to focus on being good at them. He was allowed to focus on being a pure athlete. And that probably drove him more every time he competed in something different. You know what I mean? Like some people are just competitive in that way. Like, so I feel like we should go back to letting people do this more. Maybe people would get less injured if their bodies weren't only tuned to playing basketball, which is something we've talked about at youth sport levels, right? Like maybe if Russell Wilson was also playing baseball, he'd be a better quarterback. I think he's already a pretty damn good quarterback, but like, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things that I think about.
The Mets should let Tim Tebow play in the XFL.
Yeah,
like that would be wild. I think that would be great. And
do you think Tebow would make it?
Yeah,
as a backup,
even just on the storyline as it is. Yeah,
and I mean, the Tampa Bay Vipers could use somebody right about now, but
here's the rule, right? And it's dumb, and it wouldn't work this way. You have to compete in the city you already play for. Like, you can't play for a different team.
Okay. Okay. Well, so it also seems like, you know, the New York XFL team is, like, one of the few. It's weird. Like, the New York team and the LA team are the two teams that are struggling with attendance right now. And they're the two biggest cities in the U.S. But you put Tebow on the New York team, and all of a sudden, that attendance is going to spike a little bit.
So. All right. Let's move away from baseball and talk a little bit about the football. The MLS season is going to be starting. We don't have much news on MLS right now. So we're just going to do a good old sports odds and ends prediction. Who you taking in the season this year? We'll go around the horn. JVZ, who you got?
All right. You're really putting us on the spot here.
Bud. I'm using this time to look myself.
Okay. I think one of the bigger stories this season is Chicharito coming from Mexico to replace Zlatan Ibrahimovic in LA. So I think they, I don't know. We'll see how that works out. I'm mostly concerned more about, I'm going to take a cop out here. I'm mostly concerned about like the overall health of the league. So like, I want to see if Atlanta can keep up their big attendance.
Celebrating its 25th anniversary this year is MLS.
Oh yeah, that's cool. Which makes me feel kind of old. How's Atlanta going to do? How is, I think there's a couple new teams this year. I think the Miami team is starting this year. So how are they going to do? Mm-hmm. How is Minnesota going to do? Just all these new teams. I want to see like how the league looks in general for when Sacramento eventually joins the league in a couple years. And then I'll get into it. But
jeez, I know it's the political season, VZ, but you don't have to take the political route on this answer.
I don't want to pick a team because I don't care about any of these teams.
I'm just saying.
Give us a hot take.
Pick an Eastern Conference team. Pick a Western Conference team. We'll come back to you. All right, here I go. So for me, I do like the Red Bulls and I do like DC United. But I think overall, my heart is going to fall on the Red Bulls from the Eastern Conference. As much as I do like DC United, and I think I might be more of a fan of DC United, I'm going to go with the New York Red Bulls. That's going to be that for me. The Western Conference, surprisingly enough, I don't like the LA Galaxy as much as most people do. I think Portland's also a really good team. And I feel like sometimes the obvious pick is kind of Seattle, but I'm going to go with Sporting Kansas City just because I fell in love with that team while I was playing Football Manager. All right. So that's my Western Conference team. But and then once we get around to the playoff season, we'll make our hard choices. Because we're going around the horn, DJ, make a pick.
Okay, in the Eastern Conference, I'm going to go with the Montreal Impact, mostly because my favorite soccer player of all time, Thierry Henry, is their coach and manager, so I'm going to pick the Montreal Impact. And also out west, I'll be basic and say Seattle. I'll go with the basic answer, Seattle Sounders.
I'm going to go with Atlanta and Seattle, and... And I put the story in here just to say that the season was starting, but you put me on the spot, so I'll pick a couple teams.
Yeah. All right, lock it in. We'll check back in. That'll give me a reason to watch New York Red Bulls games. Going on from there, we got some basketball news. What's going on with the basketball, VZ?
Sabrina Ionescu became the first college player, male or female, to reach the 2000 point, 1000 rebound, 1000 assist milestone.
That's amazing.
I think part of that is like you don't see players play 4 years like she does anymore, but there's plenty of players on the men's side that do that, and plenty of players on the women's side that do that as well. Actually, most of them on the women's side do play all 4 years. And so she's, I remember she chose to forego her chance to enter the WNBA draft last year, even though she probably would have been a number one overall pick. But now, after coming back, she's basically kind of cemented herself as not only the probably the best college player in the country right now, but one of the best of all time. So on top of that, she's extended her triple-double record to 26, and she's kind of doing this at the right time, just right before the NCAA tournament starts. Oregon's won the Pac-12 title. So I think they're number three in the nation, but I think that they're my favorite to win it all this year.
Ooh.
After okay. so many years of UConn dominance, I think Oregon is gonna they're gonna go all the way this year, and then UNESCO's reward for all this is gonna be to be drafted number one overall by the New York Liberty. So.
All right. Going on from there to our main story, or one of our main stories this week. We've been talking about the NHL expanding, and one of their teams, their Seattle team, is doing something, I guess, kind of interesting, but not new. They're going to be offering free public transit when they start playing in the 2021 season.
Yeah, they're going to renovate Key Arena, which was the old Sonics Arena, and current Seattle Storm Arena. They're going to renovate that for NHL hockey, and hopefully eventually get their NBA team back. There's going to be a new team opening in 2021. It's currently an unnamed team. I think somebody leaked the name Seattle Kraken to try to see what the reaction to that would be, and it was kind of mixed. This team, they're just going to subsidize all public transportation. I think they're going to offer passes through their NHL Seattle app. And then the team will pay for people to ride the train or take. I think there's a monorail that drops off there too. It's already kind of a big transit, it's a destination area, because I think it's right by the Space Needle. I think this is something that more teams should do. I take public transportation to Kings games. I take Amtrak. And it's really nice to be able to do that. If you're a person who likes to go to games and drink, then you don't have to worry about driving and parking and how you're going to get back. Ride shares are always super expensive. Why not take public transit? And if it's free, then even better. And you don't have to deal with traffic. You don't have to, and I think if you get season tickets, it's also like a really good idea to plan to use public transportation, because otherwise the parking fees are gonna be pretty outrageous if you're making this trip regularly, like I used to have to do back when in the old Kings Arena they didn't have any transportation that dropped off at the arena, and they didn't even have transportation at all that you could take back when the game ended. So, since they opened the new arena downtown, which is part of why I think, most sports arenas and stadiums should be in a high traffic downtown area. Since they've done that, they partnered with Amtrak to have a 10:30 line after the game, because these games are going to end at like 10. So that's usually pretty late. So if the team does a good job of working with the transit, with the city when it comes to transit or any, intercity lines like Amtrak, then it's usually a good thing for the fans. The other two teams to implement this policy are the Warriors and the Suns. I think the Warriors, it's good for them because nobody likes to drive into San Francisco around here, and the Suns, nobody just likes to go to Suns games in general. So,
all right,
it's
hot takes.
It's just something to help out with that. I think because parking and transportation, they're fees that you don't necessarily expect to incur when you go to a game. Like, you might buy a $10 ticket and then it's another $10 for parking, or you might buy, so it's like you think it's going to be cheap to go to the game, but then it's, you know, and then it costs a lot more than you expect. And, you know, and just having to deal with the effort of fighting with traffic to get to a game, that's not fun from experience. And it's not fun fighting with traffic to get out of the game either, especially when your team loses as often as the Kings do. So that's,
yeah. Well, moving on from that, speaking of making things a little bit cheaper, so some potential changes for sporting events tickets. So Ticketmaster, StubHub, and AXS have all had talks and told the U.S. House Committee on Energy and Commerce that ticket prices should be disclosed from the beginning. Is that like the beginning of the sale from them to you as a consumer?
Yes. So, like, if you've bought event tickets on Ticketmaster before, I think mm-hmm. Ticketmaster is like the most notorious for this. But usually you will see, like when you're trying to pick your seat, the prices mm-hmm. that they show you are before all the fees, before all the taxes and fees, and then so you'll be buying like a $20 ticket. And then, mm-hmm. and then by the time you're done with the fees, or like you'll pick that $20 ticket because you'll think, oh, that's a pretty cheap price. And then you'll go through the whole checkout process. And then you see at the end, before you make the final purchase, that, you know, all the fees they tacked on have bumped up that price to like $50.
Yeah.
That might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but.
One of the other notes you have in here that goes along with that is the fees currently range from around 8% all the way up to 40%, depending on the event.
And that can be a significant amount, especially if you're buying multiple tickets. So like something that you thought was going to be a $50 event is going to be, you know, like $80 to $100. And like mostly that's just annoying. So it's especially annoying because you go through the trouble of you know, selecting the ticket, entering all your information, logging in and all that, and then only after that do they show you the final price. So what's weird is that these companies are voluntarily saying that they want to do this, but what they're demanding.
Yeah, so that's really weird that in this kind of a situation, you have companies asking for this kind of federal mandating of their services.
Yeah, and the reason why is because I think all of them kind of like they recognize how annoying this is, but mm-hmm. if one of them tries to do it themselves, then every other provider is going to look like they're selling cheaper tickets. I think the only major provider that actually does this is SeatGeek, and I think they have like a toggle switch that lets you show either the before fees or after fees price. But I think they show the before one first until you hit that switch. But they make that switch highly visible. I think what these companies are asking for is force everybody to do this, and then we'll all be happy to do this. But if one of us tries to do this, then we're gonna cut into our own business because we look like we're offering more expensive tickets than everybody else. So it's kind of a half consumer problem, half ticket provider problem. I'm personally of the opinion that these ticket providers are also kind of doing this because the people holding the events want to charge more expensive tickets, but they are letting the ticket providers take the brunt of the blame for all these extra fees.
Okay.
And so So I think if they make all the fees transparent up front, then it's pretty obvious what you're going to be paying for the ticket itself. Because like we just mentioned in the other story, you're going to pay for the ticket, you're going to pay for transportation, you're going to pay for food and drinks at the event. It's really expensive to go to any sort of event nowadays. And I don't know if I would buy Kings tickets individually if I didn't get such a steep discount from getting season tickets. So I think if this goes through, if this plan goes through, then hopefully anybody who wants to buy tickets to a sporting event can have a much smoother experience, or at least one that's a little bit more transparent, where they're not getting surprised at the end by $20 in fees for a ticket that they thought was going to be cheap. Especially when all those fees are for like bullshit things like, you know, printing out your own tickets or other like really weird nondescript fees. At least let the consumers make these decisions with all the fees up front.
Speaking of people paying an absorbent amount of fees.
Hey, guys, just to jump in real quick. JVZ, just looking at some things because I know you're excited about tonight's matchup between the Pistons and the Kings as I am.
All right.
It's looking like the Pistons lineup, already sparse, has just lost a couple of more guys. Thon Maker and Christian Wood, now questionable. Along with Bruce Brown, Luke Kennard, Blake Griffin, rest in peace, and along with a couple of their two-way guys. So it's looking like it's just going to be Derrick Rose and, I don't know, some dudes I made. Pretty much. I don't even know them at this point. So if you are going to the game or not, JVZ, that's what you've got to look forward to.
Yeah, I opted not to go, partly due to the fact that that my friend Justin is not going. And partly due to coronavirus, and partly due to
you can say
the,
it.
The sheer amount of
it.
Effort required to go to a game, even though I've already paid for this ticket, and the amount of effort required to watch two teams that suck right now. Although the Kings are they're surging a little bit, but it's.
And the Pistons are tanked.
And the Pistons are not.
Are tanking. They are
They're surging hard. In a negative direction.
Detroit sports teams.
Under their own free will. But.
Striving for the worst of the worst.
Shout out to this basketball season for us as fans. all right. Back on track. Let's talk about Canadian youth hockey. Probably for Canada, youth hockey is about as big as football is to Texas, and probably cost just about as much. So yeah. Canadian youth hockey's cost for pretty much youth participation has skyrocketed. 47% of parents do this survey that we're looking at spend about $380 to $760, and that's in U.S. currency, on hockey equipment every season. There's also the amount spent on equipment, registration, tournaments, other fees, and because we've been talking about it throughout the whole show, travel to probably different places for their kids to participate in tournaments and other things like that. The academy tuitions has reached $40,000 annually.
For like the really rich kids that want to enroll in the special programs. Like I think like the Sidney Crosbys of the world. The prodigies, and so yeah, that's kind of outrageous. And I think $1,300 a year for the equipment, registration, tournaments, and other fees for just the normie kids, and or at least the ones that kind of want to stay competitive, maybe through high school and maybe get a college scholarship or something. Like
yeah,
that's.
So these are things that in general tend to hurt youth sports, because then it, you know, initially sometimes it comes down to a thing where parents, you kind of have a cavalcade of parents, but there are parents who are just putting their kids into youth sport kind of for the sense of camaraderie and learning team things and that kind of environment and thing like that. And then when you tell them you have to spend, you know, just to kind of round out the number, about $1,400 a year for your kid to do this thing on top of whatever other bills, you know, schooling and other things that you have, generally causes people to have to take second jobs or do all kind of things so that their kid can participate in these things. You know, and these are those kind of things that we talk about. You know, they hurt youth sports because when parents start to see these costs and start to go into debt over these things so that their kids can participate, it becomes cost prohibitive. It becomes a thing where you have to, at that point, make an extra $30,000 to $40,000 a year just so your kid can play hockey.
Yeah, like, and this article from the New York Times actually starts with a story about Samuel Girard, who is a player in the NHL now, and the decision that his parents had to make between him and his older brother Jeremy at the time, who is his brother, I think had to make the decision to decide not to play youth hockey anymore because their parents could only support one of them, and couldn't afford to have both of them play. And because the younger brother had more potential, they chose the younger brother. And I mean, they were right, but it's a decision they shouldn't have to make. Like, if you're like, they should both be allowed to participate. And, and that's tough, and really tough when it comes to, it's one thing if like they're rich families but for like poor kids that
guys, this story is incredibly wild to me, because you always hear these stories about how, especially in the United States in certain neighborhoods and certain socioeconomic levels, certain sports are impossible to play and they get priced out. Soccer, baseball, hockey. But in the case of, for example, like soccer, Latin America, and even parts of the United States, it's a very easy sport to play and very easy to get into, but it's super expensive for like youth academies and whatnot. But in the parts of the world where soccer is the most prevalent sport, it's nothing. It's literally nothing, which is kind of wild because in Canada, hockey is that sport, isn't it? For people to be getting priced out is kind of wild.
Well, so that's why I made the comparison not just to America, but to Texas specifically, right? Because Texas average youth cost is higher than it is in most other places for kids to play football. And I think part of it is on that potential that you know, your kid's going to get into the best. If you get your kid into the best youth program for football, then your kid's going to go to the best high school to play football, which is then going to lead them to go to the best college for them to play football, which will give them the best chance to get into the NFL, right? And now you're thinking about this for a 8-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's these things where probably because of how synonymous Canada is with hockey and producing good hockey talent, it's probably something that has skyrocketed more as a business than as something for the kids, right? So now all these equipment manufacturers and all these other people know that up in Canada, people want to put their kids in the best for the best so that they can do the best. So there's probably more of an upcharge than there normally is for these kind of things.
Yeah. And Yeah, I don't have a whole lot else to say other than that. That kind of just sucks. This is the kind of thing that leads to, there's other stats in here about how you know basketball and tennis participation are going up, and those are sports that require a little bit less equipment, obviously. But that's due to the fact that you know the Raptors just won the NBA title, and there's a couple Canadian tennis players that are now starting to arrive on the scene, and so you know, like hockey is Canada's sport, but it's like it might not be Canada's sport forever if this if this barrier to entry keeps going up and up and up, and then all the poor kids are going to gravitate towards other sports. And it has a lot of socioeconomic implications. It has a lot of racial implications too, because of like hockey is in general, I think not just in Canada, but in general, it's kind of seen as a sport that white people play. And then so if you've got a barrier to entry that is too high for poor black kids to join in the sport, then you're always going to run into that same cycle of demographics of, you know, like you're not going to see that many black people playing hockey, and then that's just going to perpetuate itself. Mm-hmm. So it's again, if you want the sport to change, if you want the sport to change to reflect the changing demographics of your country, then you got to make an effort to make the sport available to everybody who wants in. I think everybody sees this as a problem. Like the NHL has stepped in and they've tried to do a better job of funding some of these youth programs. Players have stepped in to try to donate equipment and help with the equipment exchange program, so that when these kids grow 4 inches a year, that they can, exchange them their equipment and get new equipment that fits and not have to pay for a whole nother set of pads. I think at least everybody sees it as a problem, but hopefully they can sort this out before hockey declines even further as Canada's sport.
So. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Especially for me, as I start to get into hockey, right? It started more as just for me being a sports fan and wanting to kind of have some kind of fandom for kind of all sports that exist at this point. And hockey has kind of always been one of these things that eluded me, and maybe possibly to a certain course, like because I don't see enough people that look like me. Even though that isn't always an issue for me. Like I kind of got into NASCAR for a good long while there, but also
I'm probably the guy that's more in tune to hockey than you, Kaz. Your point about athletes in hockey not looking like your eyes is definitely a thing. I bet that there are a lot of white people that feel that way about basketball. But I live in a region of the United States where hockey is arguably the second most popular sport. I live in an area where it is cold, that is close to Canada. So I think that hockey is a regional sport first and foremost. The NHL does have teams across the United States and into Canada, but because it's a Canadian sport, it's also a very northern regional sport. And I think that because you geographically and JVZ geographically don't necessarily live in the part of the country where hockey might be played or hockey might be seen at the youth level and going up more frequently, that can also be a factor too with general interest from the public. Like here and in Ohio and Minnesota and Wisconsin, those parts of the country where that are closer to Canada, they're huge. Hockey is still very much a sport here. So I think that plays a factor too, but I completely agree with your first point.
Yeah. So, I mean, and for me, right, I've said before, I'm a Devils fan. So one of their recent acquisitions in the last few years was a player named PK Subban, who happens to be a black person who plays hockey, who was also a Canadian. So it just, it's made it a more fun experience also because he's a very big personality. But I feel like that's more of a barrier to entry for other people than it is for me. But I think as you get people like that, as you get people like a PK Subban who is willing to be a personality outside of just being good at the sport, it'll get more people to start to look at hockey who look like me and you, DJM, right? It'll have that effect on those kind of kids and living in areas like you do. I mean,
why didn't they capitalize on Chance the Rapper when they had a chance?
That's yeah. I mean, NHL marketing in general, like,
yeah,
we can have all kinds of discussions about that, but that, yeah, it's, there's such a gulf between like how fun a sport hockey is to watch and how well it gets adopted by fans that like there's just some stuff needs to change across the board. But yeah, it, some of that starts at the youth level. So some of that is just about getting people to play and yeah, I think we would see better adoption of hockey fandom throughout the lower United States if people around these areas got a chance to play hockey at the youth level a bit more. So when you see that kind of level of participation dropping up in Canada where hockey is king, it kind of makes me worry about the potential growth of the sport in the future if that kind of participation is going down. I should say it's going down among boys. It's going up among girls. So that's always a good thing to see.
Well, and it's probably because girls don't have those giant growth spurts. So they probably get to use their gear a little bit longer.
That's part of it. And also just they're probably just making a better effort to appeal to them over the last four seasons.
Yeah. All right. Last story for today's episode. We were talking about the NFL Combine. One of the things that always tends to happen are these ridiculous, silly questions and kind of shock and awe things that they sometimes ask these athletes. But sometimes you find out some information about yourself through one of these questions. Ross Blacklock learned he had some unpaid parking tickets.
Paid parking tickets, actually. So, like, it wasn't a huge issue, but I think the team brought it up to be like, why are you racking up parking tickets? There were 37 of them in total. They were paid because they were basically taken straight from his student account. But that's also why he didn't know anything about them. And he didn't find out that he had been parking illegally until an NFL team confronted him with it. So it's like that's how deep these teams go with research. And I think most of it is kind of bullshit because it's like, I don't know how much personality information you're going to be able to glean out of all that. You can make whatever judgments you want about a guy who gets a lot of parking tickets, but, you also know people that are perfectly nice in your normal day-to-day life that are like that, or that get parking tickets and it doesn't really say anything else about them. So that's the effort that these teams are going through to try to find out information about some of these players. And that's, to the point where they, like you said, they found out something that Ross Blacklock didn't even know about himself. So that's how deep it goes. There's a theme to all these stories. It's been kind of a slow news week when it comes to, or it's because it's kind of just been, things are starting up, things are hitting their stride, and just athletes are playing games now, and so a little bit less of the bullshit, which we like to talk about on the show. But all these stories were financial stories, so hopefully that was a nice distraction from your 401k exploding this week. Yeah, we're not quite near the NBA playoffs yet.
But I will say Giannis is looking good.
Yeah, there's a nice little mini feud between Giannis and James Harden. Just arguments about skill versus athleticism and all that. Mm-hmm. James Harden is wrong. So
Giannis also had a crazy 35 minutes in last Sunday's game against the Hornets. We put up a 41 points, 40-25.
A 40-25 line, which has only been done by a select few number of people, none of which are James Harden. So it's like he's good. He's good, and the Bucks are on pace for 70 wins this year, and only two other teams have done that. So that's pay attention to that and don't pay attention to James Harden spouting bullshit. And don't pay attention to the Kings either. Cause they,
I thought the Pistons were tanking, but wow. Wow.
Yeah. When you trot out a paltry lineup like that and still go up 17 and, come out to an 18-1 lead in the first quarter against a team that is fighting for a playoff spot. That's pretty embarrassing. So I'm glad I didn't go to this game. I'm glad you all took the time to listen to the show with us. Thank you for listening. You can head on over to sportsoddsandends.com to find show notes, and all the previous episodes of the show, as well as links to iTunes and Google Play and other places where you can get podcasts. Head on over to patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support us financially. Thank you to those of you who already do that. Thank you for listening again. We'll see you next time.